Hi everyone, welcome back to the TEFL Training Institute podcast. I'm Ross Thorburn, and this week we're talking about decentering in English language teaching. My guest for this week's episode is Amal Padwad. Amal is director at the Center for English Language Education at Ambedkar University in Delhi. So in the episode, Amal tells us about, first of all, what decentering is, what counts as being the center of the language teaching world, and what are some problems with that. And we talk about some concepts and people that are unfairly on the peripheries of language teaching. Enjoy the episode. Amal, thank you for joining us. To begin with, what is decentering? What does it mean and where does the concept come from?
Well, actually, the roots of this term may be traced back to post-structuralism and even postmodernism. And in simple words, it means removing something from a central position. But it's a very complex notion, as you will easily agree. And as I understand, it refers to countering any hegemonic tendency, which comes in form of dominance or influence of a center. And for the purpose of decentering, I would call a center to be any entity which claims to have exclusive ownership of truth or expertise or right solutions, and then ends up dominating or suppressing alternative sources of expertise or knowledge or solutions. So, for example, a particular entity saying that I know everything or we have the final best possible solutions for any problem, and if you want, you must use them. Other solutions are not good. Then I would call that centering tendency. But when I say this, I think I must also clarify that I'm not suggesting a center as a problem per se. In fact, I believe that centers exist to offer some kind of stability to any structure. So the center is not a problem. Centering is a problem. What is the difference? So center is an entity, but if that center behaves in a particular way, a way that disregards or disrespects alternatives or the others, that tries to create domination, hegemony, that tries to claim exclusive ownership of a particular truth or knowledge or something, then that is a centering tendency. And any center harboring those tendencies will be a problem. So decentering is against the centering tendencies.
Great. So just to be clear, are we talking here about the center as in being the center of the English teaching world? Are we talking more about the center of the English-speaking world, or are we talking about both?
Well, eventually both. But at the moment, all the current decentering thinking and initiative that is underway, and it was initiated by the Hornby Trust in the UK. And Hornby Trust was set up by A.S. Hornby, especially with the purpose of spending all the money and resources he has handed over to the trust for the third world countries. I'm using a slightly loaded term here, but what he meant was he spent all his life working in those countries and learned a lot from there. And even Oxford Dictionary was an outcome of his work there. So he argued in the trust document that whatever he earned working in those communities should go back to those communities. And that's why Hornby Trust is supporting this initiative. Now, at the moment, the focus is on English teaching world, English language teaching world, the ELT world. And in this world, the most prominent, most visible, most easily identifiable center is the West, or what Adrian Holliday called the BANA countries, Britain, Australia, and North America. That is the most easily identifiable center. But in the decentering initiative, we take a more complex and nuanced view. And we assume that globally, this may be the center, but there are also lots of local centers. So there are centers everywhere. And decentering has to deal with all kinds of centers and all kinds of centering practices wherever they happen.
Do you want to give us some examples of this then, Amal? I think the first thing that crossed my mind when I heard this was the idea of sending so-called native speakers to different parts of the world as experts, in inverted commas, as being one symptom of centering. Is that right? And if it is right, then what are some other examples?
Absolutely. And I think that was the most prominent and visible example of centering. We have hundreds of examples of this export of native speakers all over the world. And in many cases, their only qualification was being a native speaker. And even then, they ended up in the roles of expert teachers on English language teaching. Robert Phillipson has written a lot in his Linguistic Imperialism on this whole phenomenon. But that's one example. But there are several other examples. When you find white peoples or people from the West as typically favored, preferred plenary speakers, or when they are typically preferred as consultants for any project in any country in the world, or when they are typically invited as external evaluators, as research advisors, as curriculum material designers, everywhere you find examples of this centering tendency. And then there are similar parallel examples within the country also, at the local level, because I must remind that centering is not necessarily limited to the West. That's a prominent example, but we are concerned with centering anywhere. And we are proceeding with the assumption that decentering must counter centering at any level, at the global or at the country level. And I can quote one very interesting example. In 1990s, in some states in India, there were massive teacher training projects which aimed at training primary teachers for a new textbook. And they followed the typical favorite cascade model. So there would be a small group of state trainers who were called master trainers. And those master trainers would train a handful of trainers. And then those trainers would eventually train the primary teachers. And the master trainers would be university professors. And the trainers would be secondary teachers. And the trainees would be primary teachers. Why this hierarchy? How do university professors, having never entered a primary classroom, having absolutely no idea of what a primary textbook is and what teaching young learners means, be the master trainers, the highest level in the hierarchy? And why they should not be brought down to the second level of hierarchy, why the secondary teachers should come in? These are all very evident examples of centering at the local level.
I'm so glad that you brought up young learners there. I think young learners must be something like, 90% of the people out there who are learning English as a second or as a foreign language. And if that's the case, then it must also be true that the vast majority of teachers are teaching young learners. And yet it definitely feels like the center of language teaching is adults as opposed to kids, which I really still believe just makes really very little sense at all.
That's true. Well, there are, of course, lots of books specifically focusing on young learners. But I agree with you in the sense that especially when it comes to talking about teacher development and teacher training, it is usually assumed that we are addressing teachers who are teaching adults. And so lots of theories and formulations and practices and strategies and techniques are suggested for teachers who would later go on and teach adults. So in that sense, young learners become marginal, peripheral in this whole discourse on teacher development. And if young learners are peripheral, their teachers are also marginalized. In most states in India, primary teachers anyway struggle for their identity when it comes to ELT, because primary teachers are not teachers of English alone. But if they are not teachers of English alone, they teach all other subjects. It is often forgotten that they also teach English. And so they are not treated as English teachers whenever discussions around ELT happen. So this struggle for identity is another important aspect of their marginalization in the ELT world, I suppose.
So up until now, I guess we've been talking about the problems of centering. Can you tell us about some initiatives to counter centering?
In my view, the first very essential and crucial stage is raising awareness about centering. Because a lot of centering might be happening subconsciously, unintentionally. Now, being subconscious or unintentional doesn't take away a possible harm that might result from centering. So being aware of that, the way gender sensitization was considered absolutely crucial for gender parity. In the same way, I believe that awareness, sensitization about centering possibilities is absolutely crucial to reach a stage where there would be no centering. That's first train, and there are lots of examples of that as well. But secondly, an important trend is being conscious of and promoting alternative expertise, especially local expertise and knowledge, so that we are not led to believe that we have to depend on knowledge or resources coming from the center, whether that center is the West or some high-profile university professor. There are interesting practices which try to promote, though I can say, not with absolute confidence, but I strongly believe that those practices have been unintentional. The people who initiate those practices may not be aware that they are countering a centering trend. One example is of a journal in Argentina. The FAPI Association has a journal. And one of the mandate for all possible submissions is that the references must include a certain number of local research publications. The person submitting must show an awareness of what research is happening in Argentina. In my own state, where I used to work previously, Maharashtra, one university has a mandatory provision for all the PhD students to include a subsection on Indian research in their literature review. That's a mandate. I believe that these are small but important trends which make people look at other sources, not depend on the Western sources. And thirdly, I think an important trend is to develop criticality about ideas and resources which come from the center. We should not fall into the trap of either blindly accepting them or straightforward complete dismissal. We should not fall for both the trends. We should critically evaluate them for their relevance, for their appropriateness, for their utility, to our own context, pick up whatever is useful for us and adapt it. And in that sense, I think developing the capability to adapt is a very important skill and strategy to be developed in teachers, especially in those contexts where things are imposed from above. So if teachers can critically evaluate, and if they can't escape from the textbook, they at least learn to how to adapt that textbook. I think that would be a very powerful decentering trend.
Finally, Amal, you mentioned the idea at the beginning of centering involving some people being suppressed. Do you want to tell us a bit about that? Who are the people that you think get suppressed or whose voices get suppressed in language teaching?
I can give examples from some interesting research studies some of the teacher participants did in what we call Teacher Research Initiative. INET Association of English Teachers, of which I am a secretary, I'm the secretary. Our association runs a year-long cycle of teacher research, where teachers research their classrooms. In the second and the third round of that cycle, teachers conducted studies on issues like why children cheat in the examination, or why teachers help students cheat in the examination, why parents of my students do not help them in doing homework. Now, the very fact that these came up as concerns of the teachers, and the fact that these kinds of issues never appear in any so-called standard research literature is an indication that what so-called established research considers worthwhile of exploration and validates it, legitimizes it, is utterly different from what teachers at the ground level find worthwhile exploring and wants to explore. Now, I'm not negating the value of the academic research that happens in the established normative standardized form. But those kinds of studies which appear in Western journals and publications, or which are validated even within the country by university PhD degrees, if that knowledge is only the acknowledged knowledge, and what a teacher finds from one classroom study, why teachers are helping students cheat in examination, that knowledge, the practitioner knowledge, is completely neglected, suppressed. That is what I'm referring to when you asked me about some kind of knowledge being alternative expertise or knowledge being suppressed. So practitioner expertise, local wisdom, is suppressed in this kind of hegemony.
One more time, everyone. That was Amal Padwad. For more from Amal, check out the link to his University of Ambedecker website. That's in the show notes and also on our website, which is www.tefltraininginstitute.com. On there, you'll find podcasts, videos, a link to our YouTube channel, which you should check out, information about teacher training courses like the Trinity Diploma and TESOL, and a link to help support the podcast by buying us a coffee. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you again next time. Goodbye.